welcome to the second edition of our amazing Spider cast. This week we're talking Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2 from 2004. Joining me, as they did last week, we have Chris.
Hey.
We have Justin.
Hey.
And we have James.
Woohoo!
Okay. So, when we asked left our friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, he had killed his best friend's father and told the woman that he loves that he doesn't love her back.
Not his fault.
I mean, he didn't really kill Goblin, but...
Yeah, but that's what the son thinks.
Yes.
And that's where we start off this film, because it's been about 2 years and his life is hell. I don't think anything's going right for him. He can't deliver pizza on time because he's Spider-Man. He doesn't speak to his best friend. He doesn't speak to MJ. He moved out of Harry's apartment. I don't think that's ever explained.
No, it's not.
Nope.
I mean, I can understand you wanted to stand on your own 2 feet, but I think it would have been wiser to stay with your friend until you had 2 feet to stand on.
Especially since your friend is like a millionaire.
Yeah. Well, maybe Harry's the one who like decided to move into the estate after his dad died.
Yeah, because it seems to be that he's busy running Oscorp at the time, so he might not be able to do whatever he was doing before.
Yeah, but you couldn't tell me that he doesn't have, like, oh, you can keep the apartment, I'll pay the rent or whatever. I mean, Norman was already paying the rent.
Move into my house with me.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how would you feel living with the guy who, like, hated, like, your other half?
That's a fair point.
Yeah, and they also seem to imply that the friendship is getting sort of estranged because he knows that Peter is the one who takes the pictures of Spider-Man and won't tell him his identity.
Well, that and the fact that apparently he doesn't talk to them often, because during his birthday party, both Mary Jane and Harry mentioned that they don't see or hear from him that often. And part of it is because he's Spider-Man, part of it is because he's working like 15 jobs. He's also a student in college, even though he's not doing too well in that either. So...
Yeah, the first, like, half hour of Spider-Man 2 is, like, pretty depressing.
Yeah.
It really is. It's like, I got fired. Oh, I'm failing all my classes. Oh, this girl's getting married. Oh, my best friend hates me.
But a girl getting married came later on, and that was a weird subplot, because she does try to hit on him. Or it looks like she's still holding out for him.
That scene bothered me so much.
Which one, the kiss?
Yeah, well, because she said earlier when they were walking in the street, like, I'm basically over you. And then, like, 20 minutes later, it's like, hey, you should totally kiss me. I'm about to get married in, like, 2 days.
Yeah, I think you're skipping the scene where she does kiss her fiancé and really doesn't give her the same magic that kisses Spider-Man.
But still.
Yeah, it seems like she might be in the state where as much as she knows that she loves Peter, she also understands that he's not going to succeed for her. Like, he is going to fail her, so she's sort of, like, trying to give up and move on, even though she realizes then when her fiancé kisses her that she can't. Like, she really does love Peter, or at the very least, she remembers that their moment together, even if she didn't know at the time that was them.
Also,
something was clicking in her head that wasn't right.
Also, maybe this is just me. That wedding planning went on really quick. Because doesn't that usually take, like, months to find a venue and all that?
Well, we don't know the time frame exactly because, you know, like, he has the montage where he's doing better. He has, you know, he's going to class when he uses the power. And we're just skipping all over the story. So you don't know how long that montage is. It could be a day. It could be a couple of weeks. It could be a couple of months.
True.
The passage of time isn't really clear in any of these films because, I mean, technically speaking, we've kind of sipped through about 2.5 years of these characters' lives, and I don't think we would have noticed that.
Withdrawn.
But yeah, like Chris said, the first half an hour was pretty much setting up the fact that his life sucks. He can't pay his rent. He can't deliver pizza. Even though I thought that was really dumb because he was like 30. But in order to order 8 pizzas and deliver them 44 blocks in 29 minutes just sounds insane in general.
Oh, I'm wondering why he didn't send somebody already.
Right, like, wasn't he already, like, 12 minutes late or something like that as it was? Like,
I know.
Even then, that doesn't make sense, because if you ever go... If they had 8 pizzas... unless they had 8 pizzas just sitting there, like to bake those 8 pizzas and get them across town in 29 minutes just seems like an insane task for anybody.
Right, like when I call my pizza place, they're normally like 15, 20 minutes for me to go pick it up.
And that's one pie.
Yeah.
Great. I don't know.
See, I don't know what this is because I haven't ordered pizza in months because I just pick it up straight from Little Caesars already made.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I'm
Little Caesars
that's probably
is gross.
Yeah,
gross.
It's like 4 minutes off campus. Yes, but it's also only $5 and it's 4 minutes away from campus, so I just sort of settle like, eh, this works.
You should be ashamed.
Occasionally I go to the like local place, but it's also tiny and only fits about 8 people in there at a time.
But you just said you're going to pick it up, so does it matter?
No, it's not a local place.
Yeah, it's like a local, like, actual restaurant, Italian pizza place.
Yeah, so order ahead and pick it up. Anyhow, we're not talking about James' pizza habit here.
I thought Spider-Man 2 was the pizza time. That's the sub- I believe that was the subtitle in some European countries. Spider-Man 2 is pizza time.
Pizza time.
It might as well have been, because nothing happens for the first 40 minutes of this movie.
So it's the opposite of the ass movie.
Right.
That's something else that bothered me about that scene in particular. Like, when he goes and he's really bad at keeping his identity secret. Because, like, he runs into the alley, then turns into Spider-Man, and that black guy automatically thinks that Spider-Man stole his pizzas instead of thinking, how did that kid, like, just go into the alley, lose his pizza, and Spider-Man just, like, flies out with his pizzas and over the span of 10 seconds.
I mean, that's not, I mean, like, the guy's not going to get a great look at Peter, so he just sees somebody going out and he's Spider-Man. Like, it's kind of goofy that he assumes that it's not Spider-Man, but it's not like it's going to be like, oh my, I know who Spider-Man is. Like, even when he's on the train and he gets unmasked, nobody recognizes him because he's nobody special.
That's part of the point of Peter. He's just an average guy. Like, the guy who, like, one of the guys on the train said, basically says that in almost those exact words. It's just some kid.
Yeah. Even though that's kind of weird, because he has to be like 20-something.
Well, yeah, like 22.
he's probably like 20-21.
He's 20-ish.
Yeah. I just assume he's like at least 21, because they're drinking at the party that Mary Jane announces her engagement. But it's a public event, so maybe nobody's checking for IDs.
Yeah, it's New York, no one cares.
But we do care. But yeah, I mean, the first half of it is just setting up the fact that his life is crappy and kind of just reestablishing what the characters are after the time frame. We are in that Mary Jane is now in a play. Harry's running Oscorp in the absence of his father, well, I guess in the death of his father. Peter, as you mentioned, is just, his life is in shambles. Aunt May is having financial difficulties. Her house is going to be foreclosed on. And we meet the film's villain, Alfred Molina. And it was a great introduction because not many films have the hero and villain sitting down for tea before they start beating each other up.
Well, I mean, like at the beginning, Octavius isn't exactly a villain at that point. He's just a general scientist. So, which is one of the weird things I found about Spider-Man 2 is that it's paced a lot like the first film, like an origin story. That's pretty much because it is. It's the Doc Ock origin story. Like,
right.
It's just, you know, they don't focus on him all that much. It's just that it's paced out exactly that way, where it would be this long kind of drawn out thing where you're going to meet him as the scientist and then, you know, you get the turn of why everything goes down, and then you see him go crazy. Like it's like an hour before, you know, he's actually Doc Ock.
Yeah.
And I think that structure, I think you're right, and I think it works a lot better here. I mean, yes, most of the first 40 minutes are just establishing character and setting, but I think they work really well, particularly because, like, the Doc Ock origin stuff actually chains very organically into the rest of the movie. Like, it's less like the first one where he becomes Spider-Man, and then it transitions into basically a third of the movie of him just being Spider-Man, and then a third of the, and then they have the conflict between Spidey and Ock, Goblin, excuse me. Here, it's very much a more organic transition of the, he's conflicted about trying to balance his Spider-Man identity and his Peter Parker life and alongside the Ock plot. Like, I think it flows a lot naturally between the different acts that it did in the first movie.
It really does.
It really does, and it was making me think of why I'm a fan of like the original Spider-Man trilogy, and I'm still a fan of like Marvel films, but it it really gives you a reason to kind of understand the film. He has a purpose in this film. It's not like he's just evil for evil's sake. Even though he does kind of go over the top by the end, he's not even really that evil. He's just kind of misguided. And I think if you didn't have these if you didn't have this setup at the start of the film, especially with the wife, who I don't think is a character in the comics, I could be mistaken there. I don't believe he was married when he became Doc Ock.
No, but, I believe she was created for this.
Yeah, it does add an extra element, even though I have to say her death is extremely cheesy.
It's so dumb.
There are actually, I think there's like 3 or 4 scenes in this film where they have like a close-up of a woman screaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I can name all of them too. Because they happen like in the first hour.
I think part of it is this is just Sam Raimi's horror roots showing.
Maybe.
Yeah, it definitely feels more Raimi-esque in terms of the total jumps than the first one did. Like, I think the scene that best represents that is in the hospital where the surgeons are about to remove his arms.
Oh,
and then they go crazy
and
kill all the doctors. Yeah, like that one has a really good balance in between sort of leaning slightly into horror, but also still being darkly comic. And it's one of those very much feels. It's one of those moments where you see, okay, yes, this is in fact a movie from the guy who made Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
Right up until the giant Darth Vader no.
Oh yeah, where even like his arms like rise up, the mechanical arms rise up into the air.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
Well, and I think that's why it works, because a lot of it could seem hammy and cheesy, and it does, but it embraces that fact and it runs with it instead of trying to downplay how the guy has 4 mechanical arms. It's kind of goofy looking in general. But they kind of, you know, they give it this horror entrance where it's kind of spooky and demented, and it kind of gives the arms their own kind of brain, like they're functioning outside of him.
So yeah,
they explain why that happens that way.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting introduction. I thought it was a great
like
origin
that
for him.
They gave the arms kind of like.
I guess those are the characters. We're also. We're also reintroduced to J.K. Simmons very early in this film. I guess because he was such a huge part of the first one, they give him a lot more to work with in this film. And again, I think he has the best moment in this film, including the climax when he's at the wedding.
Oh yeah, that was a great scene.
I love the look on his wife's face.
the caterer?
Yeah, tell her, don't open the caviar.
It's fantastic, and the moment with the Spider-Man costume where he's kind of lamenting, always beating him up, and how he was a hero, and then he switches mid-sentence when he knows the costume.
Have you seen the deleted scenes for Spider-Man 2? I think there's one where like he's in the costume in the office, he's just messing around, and then like Robbie comes in, and he's just got like this awkward look on his face.
Yeah, Robbie doesn't get much to do. Robbie just gets to kind of your penance.
So, real quick, did Robbie know that Peter was Spider-Man?
I'm always of the assumption that if they, okay, they do, they probably don't, but they don't care to know. Like, they realize why he needs the mask.
That's kind of what I got, too, because it was... I forget which scene it was, but he gave Peter, like, this look. He's like, I heard Spider-Man was there, and it's like, oh, he knows.
Well, I assume they would have to figure it out. They are reporters, and the fact that he's the only person in the city who can get pictures of Spider-Man, he always has to be there. Like, I assume Spider-Man does not hire an actual photographer to give pictures to a newspaper that's going to slander him all the time.
I've actually
never got why Peter doesn't go to a different newspaper to submit his pitches.
I think they're the biggest and high and most like high like the most high paying one in New York. I think that was the reason.
Jameson's a cheapskate. I think they established that
pretty well. Well, yeah, but it's also got a lot of subscribers.
Again, not important, but yeah, I agree. It's very. And I think this is kind of the same complaint. Yeah, there's not a ton of plot here, even when Octavius becomes Doc Ock. Like, his plot is really in the background. This is more of a romance story again.
All right, but there's a lot of plot. It just doesn't really have anything to do with the villain.
Yeah.
Oh, like, absolutely. It very much is about Peter trying to find that balance in his life and deciding if the sort of sacrifices that he has to make in order to be Spider-Man or Peter Parker are worth it.
Yeah, and we kind of get the trope of the second superhero movie, at least at the time, which was the superheroes using their powers. It happened to Superman. Batman has no powers to use. It happens to Spider-Man. I don't count some of the X-Men lost their powers in X2 as well, but they just sort of came to make it easier.
I thought that was the third one.
Because don't they drug Magneto?
Well, yeah, for like 10 minutes.
They drug him for most of the film. He gets out for the climax. And it's the same thing with Professor X, where they kind of... Anyhow.
So.
Yeah, point is, he begins to lose his power, and we are yet to believe that this is kind of psychosomatic. And that it's him just thinking that he's using his power because he doesn't want to be Spider-Man anymore.
That scene in the hospital, in the doctor's office, that irritated me because he more or less said that he was Spider-Man, and I wish that he had worded it better.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true. Have you never dreamt of being a superhero?
Well, I wouldn't say I wouldn't say that my friend is thinking about it because that's just sad. And it's sort of, it's also very telling. It's like, I don't dream that I'm Spider-Man, but my friend does, and my friend wanted me to tell you this question.
Well,
if he just stuck with him saying, like, sometimes I dream that I'm Spider-Man, it wouldn't have sounded, like, as cheesy.
I think it's supposed to sound cheesy, though.
Yeah, I think, because I see, the way I would read it is not necessarily that he's saying, oh my god, I'm Spider-Man. It's that he is an adult. He's like, he accepts that he's in his 20s. And the fact that he's dreaming of being a superhero is kind of... You dream of being a superhero when you're a kid. That's kind of the dream you have. You want to find stuff like that. That's not the dream you have when you become an adult.
You don't know my life.
Well, I'm just saying, and like, people... Like, you don't say, oh yeah, that's not... I dreamt about being a superhero. I had this bright... You know, nobody dresses up with a towel around their neck anymore. Okay, aside from Justin.
Whoa. Not me, but this guy I know.
Your friend, right?
Yeah, my friend named Austin.
Yeah, well, I think that's something that people do in general. Like, if not in real life, at least in movies, where they sort of say it, frame it in those kind of ways to try and distance themselves from it because they feel embarrassed about having those kinds of troubles. So I think it makes sense that he would talk about his Spider-Man problems in that kind of way. Like, it very much fits.
Yeah, and again, I don't think that a lot of people expected Spider-Man to be somebody that young, which is what we get later on with the train scene reinforcing that. One problem I have with the film when he uses his power, and I've always had problems with this, is he sees like somebody getting mugged in the alleyway, and he doesn't help. And I'm just thinking, like, you don't need special powers to help with that.
You really don't.
Right, like, you could just, you don't even need to go into the alley.
You can just, like, scream.
Right, you just call attention to it. And that would probably have stopped it.
But no, that dude got mugged because Peter's too much of a jerk and can't think.
What? That's one of the things I really didn't like. Like, I mean, I have issues with the film overall, but I by the end of the film, like, Peter's kind of completely unlikable.
Is it because of the whole Mary Jane thing?
Well, it's like, it's just like his attitude just towards everything, and it's like he's just this depressing, you know, broken person, and every decision he makes is wrong, and it's like, you just want to shake him. Like, stop, stupid. Like, stop being such a jackass.
I think he does get really frustrating, particularly with Mary Jane, especially after the whole engagement thing. I would have been... Because, like, he's trying to woo her with poetry and, like, coming to her place, like, dude, back off. You blew it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the thing he doesn't realize, though, is that because he is stuck in sort of a sense of adolescence, that he doesn't quite understand how to properly approach this kind of situation. So he does those things and embarrasses himself as a result.
I think the other thing is that, maybe this is just me, those two just do not, like, entirely good chemistry.
Oh, there's no chemistry between Kirsten Dunst and Tobey Maguire at all.
I'm not sure whose fault that is. If it's his fault, or if it's her fault, or it's the writing's fault, or like,
I think
a combination of all three.
I really think it's Maguire. Like, I thought he played pretty good Peter in, you know, the first one, and a fairly good Spider-Man. I don't think he's very good in this movie at all.
And I think I mentioned this at the first film. I think this is one of the problems with aging him up. It's because I feel like his behavior would have made more sense as a high school student.
Right, exactly. Like, except you're playing them as 22-year-olds or 23-year-olds or whatever, and it's like you're still acting like 14 or 15.
Yeah.
Because, the same thing with his job. I understand he's Spider-Man, but that is his priority. And at the same time, he's a pizza delivery boy. You can kind of do the Spider-Man thing while you deliver a pizza. I don't get why he rides the bike.
Right. It's like...
It's New York.
He web sings. I mean,
oh, yeah, that too. I mean, like, all he has to do is just go into an alley, like, change into his clothes, and he's pretty much good.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's a lot of his decision, again, seems like stuff that would have made sense. We would have accepted if he's a high school student who doesn't understand. But the fact is that he's 20-something, he has problems talking to girls. I'm not saying that, you know, people develop, you know, there are people who naturally don't know how to speak well to the other sex.
All right, there's always people that are going to be socially awkward.
But, yeah, he doesn't seem to have any type of adult development at this point.
Yeah, and I think the writer's personal works for me. I think the reason it does feel like not quite great for a lot of people is just because, like, while I think Dunst and McGuire are both good actors on their own, I don't think they quite click together. Because I think script wise it works well. I mean, all their decisions feel like things that are organically transitioned from the kind of decisions they've made before and what we understand about them. Like, all the decisions are natural and feel right and progress in regards to what the story's trying to do.
Sure.
It's just that the actors aren't quite paired up as well. It's sort of the exact opposite of another Spider-Man movie we'll get to later down the line.
Yes. So I would say this much, and I remember at the time this was a big topic because, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, she didn't end up being anybody, but Peter's neighbor, I thought he had, because she kind of has that awkward charm that he has as well, and I think they work together even though they don't share much screen time together. Because they're both so weird.
Yeah, there's an actual chemistry between them, and even though they only share like a couple scenes, like it kind of works.
I found her like endearing, but I was just two things: was she that guy's daughter or his granddaughter?
His daughter.
Okay, because I thought I heard him like say granddaughter at one point, and then second. Something about, I don't know why, the batter just seemed like kind of off to me at times. I think it was the way that she played it, where like she felt just like too awkward. Like they just picked off a random girl from the street and was like, hey, we need you to wear this and be this way.
And she did a great job with that because that really was what she was playing. I mean, she gets so, she almost burns herself on the stove. I remember at the time people were thinking that might be Gwen Stacy.
Really?
God.
Yeah,
because
before it came out, there was just word that there's going to be another blonde girl in Peter's life, and when you think about Spider-Man, the blonde girl is Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, that would have been a worse kiss.
Well, it was also. I mean, granted, they did eventually end up introducing Gwen Stacy into the film franchise, but it would have been a reversal where MJ was the first and then Gwen Stacy came along. But yeah, at the time, because Gwen Stacy was such a big part of Spider-Man, people thought she'd be introduced. But, you know, this is, again, going back to, like, this was one of the first films I started following when I started following films, and I just remember people having that reaction, and then kind of seeing her be this thing. The thing I don't get, and I guess it doesn't need to be spelled out in the movie, is I don't know what he spends his money on that he's always broke.
How much is his apartment? Because, I mean, it's not much, for one thing.
It's it's not even like an apartment, it's like a room.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it has, like, because the bathroom isn't in.
Yeah,
he, his bathroom's shared.
Yeah.
Another thing, Betty at the Bugle mentioned something about an advance. That one of his paychecks didn't come. Like, what did they give him the advance for, and why wasn't it enough?
Well, I assume that they gave him the advance, I assume, because he needed to pay his rent, and then, like, you have to work it off, so the assumption is that he has a working relationship with the Daily Bugle, and he would eventually, but, like, he got paid, but it didn't cover the money she already gave him, so that's why he's going to cash his check.
I like the idea of the fact that Peter's actually a drug addict in this film, and I think that plays off a little bit better.
You think?
But I mean, that's the point of the film.
Do you think the reason why he couldn't like use his powers because he had like the shakes the whole time?
Yeah, he was just like he was stoned like the entire time.
Gotta say that, Jay, in my face. Harry, you're doing this film too much. To
but I really did enjoy it, and I think part of it was because of the film. But I also think the action scenes in this was really a step up from previous films.
Oh, absolutely. I think a big part about that is the improved CG. Spider-Man swinging around actually feels like it's part of the same world as a lot of the sets. Like in the first one, the CG felt disconnected and weightless from all the actual physical New York buildings, but here it feels a lot more connected to everything.
Yeah, especially those scenes early on where when he's delivering the pizza and he's like kind of like rescuing, like he rescues the kids, and like it feels like it's natural there.
Yeah, I think the other big thing is the fact that he has a villain he can see. Like, you know, like we mentioned with Green Goblin, it's like he had that huge broken costume, where this is basically CG arms, so you can kind of fight him and just kind of have an idea of where the arms would be.
Right. Well, and he knows, he also knows who he's fighting. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's not this mystery dude in a green suit, and he doesn't know what's going on. Like, he has this relationship, even if it's, you know, minor. He has this relationship with Octavius, and he's able to build off of that, whereas the Goblin had a relationship with Spider-Man, but not the other way around.
Yeah, I think that's true. Like, a combination of being more physically connected as well as more dramatically resonant means, hey, you combine those two elements with Raimi now having more action experience, and you get some really terrific sequences, obviously most notably being the train scene.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the train fight actually still looks really, really, really good.
Oh, yeah. For a movie 10 years, that's 10 years ago, I think it looks a lot better than the action in the last Spider-Man movie. And I think that's partially because of the timing. I think because they actually had more physical stuff they were working with, whereas nowadays 80% of blockbusters are almost pure CG, especially in the superhero ones. So having being forced to work with more tangible things helps give it more actual weight to it.
I did think the first it's the scene where May and Peter are in the bank and then ends up with
the bank
Otto,
and then
the
one that ends
wall.
Up on the top of the building.
Yeah, I parts of that look really good, but it's really goofy and cheesy now. Like the whole part where, you know, she like bungees up.
Yeah.
Like, that's really bad. And then she, like, whacks him in the head with, it's like,
yeah.
Oh,
well, I feel like some of that is deliberately, like a deliberate
choice.
Yeah,
no, it's deliberate.
Like, that's
it's like
one
we're,
of the
we're making, like, you
that,
know, this goofy comic.
No, I thought I was having flagged there. But yeah, I think that one's another one of those examples of Raimi having that really good tonal balance, where as much as it feels like Aunt May is actually in danger, he's also capable of still throwing in comic jabs on the side to help it balance it out. And one of the examples I always point to when people talk about the Raimi Spider-Man never cracking any jokes while Spider-Manning, because he very much does throw in a couple one-liners in this bite.
Yeah. The one thing I noticed with the action scenes and a couple of scenes, actually, is there's a lot of callback to like the first film or out of similar structures. Like, the first fight in the first movie was when Mary Jane was in danger. This time they put Aunt May in danger. You have the kind of the callback to the New York scene and the train. I thought they did it wonderfully here.
That one's worse. This one's way better.
I thought it was
more
so
deserved.
Much worse.
Really?
But I thought the whole, train stopping sequence where he's like with the webs and then he stops it and then he passes out and they like pull him back on and then they body surf him. Like, come on, what the fuck? And then and then it's like, oh, we're gonna do the whole New York stand together. And I'm like, oh, geez, shut the fuck up. Like,
I think it works
I
really well for me for two reasons. One, it's pretty short of those parts. And two, like, it's situated immediately after he just saved all the lives, so it feels directly earned.
At least
it's far more of a natural transition
though.
From point
but, like,
A to B.
Like, the whole, like, we're going to raise him up like he's, like, our angel, and then, oh, jeez. And then, like, the kid brings the mask up. I found this for you. Oh, shut the hell up.
I still don't get how that...
The kids were stupid.
I don't get how that matters, because he throws it outside the drain.
Right?
I've never
so
got...
stupid!
That makes no sense.
So dumb!
I mean, it's a minor thing, but that has always bothered me, because he throws it outside while he's on the train. So there's no way it could have, like, it flew in at really high speeds and ended in the window that the kids happened to find.
Seriously.
As someone who has no knowledge of how the laws of physics work, I'm going to assume that Steve Ditko just drew a new mask in and handed it to the kid. Which, to be fair, is how I assume a lot of things work in any animated or comic situations. When something's not explained, I just assume the artist gave them to him. So I'm going to assume that's how it happened. Like, the prop guy's just like, here you go, kid.
It's as good an explanation as any.
I just like to imagine, like, those kids, like, saw him one day, and then they pointed to, like, they have a bunch of other kids with them, and they pointed to, like, that's Spider-Man.
And nobody's going to believe them.
I know, but I just like that the fact, like, we promised we won't tell them, and they just, like, completely throw him under the bus one day.
Well, I think Peter is such a nondescript dude that even if you probably saw him, you wouldn't notice him. Which I guess is the part of the problem with this film. Well, not the film, but part of his problem as an identity. He's kind of a average guy who has nothing special about him other than the fact that he is Spider-Man.
I still think he's really bad at keeping his secret identity.
Well, I mean, I think it's part of the things with movies.
How many people know that Batman is Bruce Wayne? Jesus Christ.
Like 20?
Yeah, it's like everybody knows.
I think it's just a movie thing because it's just really hard. Like, they don't want to... In comics, you do it because you need to continue telling the story. Movies don't need to do that. Because, I mean, by the end of this film, Mary Jane knows, Harry knows, Doc Ock knows, but he's dead, Green Goblin knows, but he's dead.
The butler knows.
Most of the train passengers
know. Wait, was the butler...
I'm kidding.
No, the butler doesn't appear in this. It doesn't appear in this film.
He does for like 10 seconds.
Yeah, he does. He actually says something to Harry. He's like it's a throwaway line, like your dad only got obsessed with his work or whatever.
Yeah,
he tells him not to obsess
about Spider-Man, but he doesn't tell his ward that, like, yo, dude, your dad was a psycho when he killed himself. He's a great butler.
Well, somebody's getting fired after the third movie.
I like to imagine that, like, he just was, like, roaming the halls one day cleaning, and then, like, he just passed Doc Ock, and he's like, should I tell Harry about his dad? Probably not. he's just trying to milk it and see how long he can go.
He's not worthy yet.
He probably figures at this point he'd be screwed over if he told him. He's like, hey, I gotta keep my job now, so might as well just hold it in.
Speaking of Harry, James Franco is a great actor, but early on, that scene in the lab where everything goes wrong, he acts like a 6-year-old.
Oh, he's a ham. Like, he just hams it off.
I'm in charge here. I have the money.
Shut it off. It's my stuff.
Yeah, as much as I love James Franco, and anyone who's heard me talk about Spring Breakers will attest to my love of James Franco.
Spring Break.
Spring Break forever, bitches. I think Harry is I think almost practically every scene in this movie works really well and couldn't be removed in any way without hurting the plot meaningfully. The Harry stuff is sort of my problem, and I think it sort of applies to the first movie as well, at least in the stuff I talk about his revenge for his dad's death. Like, that's the only thing that doesn't feel directly important to this movie and feels like just a lazy one of those, hey, we're planting seeds for sequels down the line.
Oh yeah, which, all the Harry stuff is definitely like you're trying to tie 1 to 3.
But yeah, it's like okay, where he smacks Peter in the party. It's like, do something, Peter. You do not have to take this.
I know they're trying to build a franchise, but it's one of those bad ideas for building franchises where you're just only having a third of a plot and just saving the rest of it for the sequel, which is sort of a problem we'll get into another Spider-Man movie that we'll talk about later. But yeah, other than that, I think, like, I would say 97% of this movie works wonderfully, but the whole the Harry revenge subplot feels sort of disconnected from everything.
It
still does work to chain things together with regards to Octavius and other elements, but it feels, it doesn't quite feel there.
I think that they were using to build towards. It just kind of sucks that everything got pulled from underneath him with the third.
Right. And also, speaking of Harry and Ock, I like that Harry tells him, like, he flat out tells him, do not hurt Peter. And then the first thing that Ock does is, like, throw a car
right
towards the two of them.
Yeah,
and then he throws him into a wall. It's like, you were so bad with instructions, dude.
Like, I didn't get what was the point of the car. Like, how was Peter supposed to dodge that if
right
he didn't have Spider-Man?
if he's not Spider-Man,
he
would have and Mary Jane are dead.
He's minor insanity at this point. He's not quite thinking straight. Like, how do I open the door? Car!
Can you imagine, like, if he actually, like, smashed him with the car, then he shows up, he's just like, ooh, I goofed.
How do I find the Spider-Man?
And then another thing is, like, so from the angle that they have when, they're showing him, like, walking, he comes, from around the corner, so do you, like, just curve the car or, like, make a wide throw and hope that it hit the cafe? Is he wanted?
Yeah, certainly.
No one's going to get that joke.
This is the first time the movie Watchhead has ever been mentioned in about a decade. even though it only came out 6 years ago, it's the first time it's ever come up.
I think it will enough. And it has.
I have never seen it.
I mean, it's one of those films that you have to go in and kind of understand
really
that nothing's going to make
sense.
Okay, moving on.
Look, somebody has to. This is the last time it will ever be brought up for another decade. Until people are browsing Wikipedia for Angelina Jolie's, like, filmography. They're like, oh, what was this movie that happened? It's one of those, oh yeah, that happened movies that you remember when you look at people's IMDb pages. Like how people do that someday and remember there was a third Men in Black film.
Wait, what?
There was a third Men in Black film.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was two years ago.
I'm messing with you.
Okay. Anyhow, back to Spider-Man.
Back to good things.
Back to Spider-Man. Yes. So I guess since we haven't touched, and it's like, what do you think of Ock's giant plan to build a mini sun?
That was good.
It makes about as much sense as the rest of the movie. So
true.
Let's do it.
He was building a fusion reactor, and he was doing that before he went full
right
Doc
right
Ock. So it makes sense that he's like, oh, crap, my plan failed. Wait a minute, it would have worked. I'm going to build another one and do it right
now. So
right
now I'm going to build another one in an abandoned building. Like, that
yeah
that makes
yeah, but I didn't
near
get
the
it
river.
What was the purpose of it?
I think it was for renewable energy generator.
Well, I mean, that's not an evil scheme.
Just because.
Well, no, he's not evil. He's a scientist.
Because science.
Yeah, he wants to prove that he can do it.
And they needed something for him to do.
Yeah, Nobel
Other
Prize, Peter. Nobel Prize.
The thing that bothered me about the scene in the lab is that it was basically like a giant Foreshadowtron 4000. It's like, oh, this USB chip will keep the tentacles from taking over my mind. If he had more tritium, he could destroy
right
the entire city. It's like, could you be any more blatantly obvious?
It's like we're gonna
well,
have
you have to with some of those things. Like if you don't bother setting it up, it'll just be like, wait, why is he suddenly? Why is he evil all of a sudden?
Okay, but dude,
like,
it was unnatural.
Like,
it was really, dude. It was like super heavy-handed.
Right, but and it's also one of those things where if you think about it, it's like, why would somebody that's this smart and can like basically play with the sun, like create a small sun and play with it in this room? Why would they only have one failsafe for their special like crazy arm thing that could theoretically take over?
I want to go with hubris because he's the kind of person who would be a little careless with these kinds of things, like in the grand scheme of it, because he thinks high enough himself that he could pull it off.
I think part of it would though was they could have made him as a bit more of a mad scientist because he's extremely sympathetic, he's extremely intelligent, he's extremely well spoken. It does seem kind of weird that he has like these general missions in his grand scheme where it's like, this is your life work, you didn't think about this. Like Peter comes in the day before, he's like, what if this happens? Oh, it won't happen.
And then what do you know?
The other thing that I never really thought of till right now, it's like, why did this whole experiment take place like on a city block in New York, like, and not in an actual lab? Like, why was it in a loft somewhere?
That's like, a good point. I never thought about that.
Like, outside of just, you know, we want it to be.
But is it, I mean, you could also say, like, why is the first experiment of it a public showing and not something that you kind of do in
yes,
a lab?
Right.
Well, true.
he's really confident that this thing is going to work.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't,
even Norman ran extra tests.
And look where that ended up.
Right.
But he ran the test.
Right.
True.
They were in a lab.
That movie also... That scene also had, like, one of my favorite lines, where in the aftermath of, like, the explosion and everything, Harry's just like, Spider-Man humiliated me by touching me.
Right. So bad.
He sounds like a white... He sounds like he just got cooties.
I have to say every of it. I guess he learned from his father how to ham it up a bit.
That's so... Harry's stuff is just so...
Up this entire movie.
I don't know if James Franco was just, like, straight up high during filming, or if, like, they just, like, gave him a set of instructions and he, like, ran with it, but...
If there is one thing I know about James Franco is that he is always high. that's probably the case. Unless they, like, forced him to sober down for this, and that's what...
That's why he's so strange. What is the sensation of being
I'm sober. It's Dave. Are you sober right now? What?
But I guess, is there anything else you've... I don't think we mentioned... I don't think it's as big in the first one. I think it also comes in the third one. But Aunt May's speech. And she always has, like, these on-point speeches.
That is such a good speech.
It is, but it's like, you go into this whole... Like, at that point, I was like, does she know if he's Spider-Man?
She definitely knew.
And I also like the scene when Peter tells her that he was responsible for Uncle Ben.
Oh, I love that scene.
Absolutely.
Again, that is also ruined by the sequel when they retconned that anyway.
we'll get to that next week.
It's not ruined by the sequel. You can theoretically stop here and nothing's ruined. They just, you know, fumbled what to do with it the next time around. Spoilers for next week's episode, Spider-Man 3 kind of sucks.
What do you mean kind of?
Okay, spoilers from 7 years ago.
I particularly like the extremely Asian lady that plays the violin.
That was so offensive.
Yes. I'm like, wow, this seems like the first time she comes on, I'm like, this seems like a little racist. And then later in the movie, I'm like, this is really kind of racist.
I never thought about it when I saw it because I was only like 10, 11 years old. I'm just like, oh, it's funny. But now looking at it, it's like, wow, this is like one of the most racist things I've ever seen in a superhero movie. It's
more racist than the two blackface robots from Transformers 2.
They're pretty racist.
Yeah,
they are the most so.
I like on a sliding scale, like on a scale 1 to 10, with the robots being a 10, this is like a 7 or 7.5, maybe even an 8. But anyway. Did you guys also know that Michael Bublé sung the Spider-Man theme song during the credits? And that someone let that happen?
No, because I was too disappointed there wasn't another Nickelback song. I mean, what are the teens going to make Sonic the Hedgehog tribute videos to? I mean, think of the teens.
They'll have to use Vindicated again.
I like Vindicated.
I know, it's a good song. It's a really good song.
I honestly cannot remember what it sounds like. But then again, there are less Sonic tributes.
Oh, you're lame. Something that really bothered me is that MJ left the safe option for a guy who is like a walking health hazard.
Yes, but I mean, a hot one. I mean, you kind of always assume that she had a thing for Spider-Man. That's kind of ruined her relationship with Harry.
I know, but... I think another thing is that we didn't really see her and John interact all that much, so I couldn't really get a feel for them.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of the point, is that he was supposed to be a backup option. It was her just saying that I'm gonna settle. I mean, again, she, you know,
I'm gonna settle for an astronaut.
I know.
I'm gonna settle for having J. Jonah Jameson as my dad-in-law.
I know.
Okay, that might be a bummer.
Like, I understand what you're saying, Earl. It's just like when you think about it, it's like
when you think about it, you're gonna get married to an astronaut,
right?
That's like, just imagining.
Which makes sense, except for the person who you're waiting for is Spider-Man.
Well, okay, and Spider-Man is also like prone to screwing up and getting people killed.
Well, and then you find out who Spider-Man is, and it's your fuck up crush,
right?
Like she realizes, dude.
Yes, it's gonna fuck up, but it's gonna be worth it, and not just because you could kiss me upside down, and because when we're around each other, I always end up with really translucent t-shirts. But partially because of those two things.
I guess, in theory, Peter could make a pretty cool sex swing out of his web, so...
Oh, God.
Well, I mean, that is how they start the next one.
They end the movie that way. They end it. That's their scene. Oh, no. But, yeah, I mean...
Can we not?
Oh, he's got a lot of webbing inside of him. He can go.
I just like to imagine, like, as she leaves the wedding, they see, like all these people look at her and be like, what the hell are you doing?
Can you imagine what J. Jonah Jameson is going to think once he realizes, like, who she left him for? Like, who's that girl leaving my son for? Parker!
Oh, God.
Just pulls the biggest cigar out of his mouth.
Yeah. It would make sense if they followed up with this at all.
They really don't. And I'm kind of wondering, like, if he ever mentioned, like, hey, so, your son's, like, ex-fiance? Yeah, I'm totally hitting that.
Because he does have that montage. Well, we'll get to that in Spider-Man 3. Is there anything else you folks want to talk about with this film?
It's something that it kind of just goes across, like, for Spider-Man in general. Is like Peter's always kind of portrayed as this really bright, like, individual, one of the smartest people in the Marvel universe, up there with like Reed Richards and Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
And these films do nothing for that. Like, they say it a lot. Like,
he's kind of dumb. He's kind of dumb across all three movies.
Peter's a genius. And it's like, dude, he's not a genius. He's an idiot.
He's
living
really
in a hellhole.
In a place where he probably, like, gets mugged.
Like, he can't fit. Like, he's trying to fix his bike and he drops a tire on somebody out of his window. Like,
how is that smart? Why would you not do that, like, in your room, on your bed?
Yeah, well, he's, like, science smart. I mean, in terms of any other real-world thing...
Dude,
he's
common sense smart. Even I don't have to do that.
But I mean, like, yes, he's science smart, but, like, I mean, just from, like, the comics, like, he was able to create the web shooters. Granted, he doesn't have web shooters in this, but you would think that he could do something mechanical, like, fix his fucking bike. Like, it's like he can't do, like, normal things. It's like he has, like,
Asperger's or something.
It's
like the spider bike gave him like 20% more stupidity.
I think, and kind of jumping it around, this is kind of what people criticize the Batman films for, because he's also kind of a great detective.
Right, he's supposed to be a detective. And
they don't show that stuff.
Yeah,
they go through this entire film and everybody's saying, like, brilliant but yazy. And it's like, yeah, you don't try to show us that. And I guess it's probably not as exciting as an audience to watch him messing around with the ab equipment for 30 minutes or whatever. But
that's the thing, like an Iron Man, like...
They showed him
building stuff, and it's like, doesn't have to be long, and they can get away from it, but they show him doing smart things smart ideas. Instead, like, Peter is basically this, like he's not very bright in these movies. He's just kind of like, that's the character, the historical character, but we're going to bring that aspect over and say that's what he is, but we're not ever actually going to show it to you. We're just going to kind of pound it into you by saying it over and over again.
And hopefully it'll stick.
Right.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Okay. Right. My thing, just real quick.
Sure.
I love the end swing sequence. That's still pretty awesome.
Yeah, speaking of, I also like that during the train sequence when he falls out and he's on the street and he webs on the ground. That's a pretty awesome sequence as well.
Yeah, the web stuff is a lot better in this one than I think, and it is in the last one and the other and the following one.
Okay, so as always,
one more thing.
Okay.
Just a minor note that I noticed they switched the aspect ratios. Like before, it's in the what's the number for it? Hold on, the 185:1 aspect ratio is sort of the normal widescreen, and then for this one they switched to the 240. So I just thought that was a nice aesthetic choice that sort of shows off the action a bit better. Like, I think there are some things that work better in the other things. Like, for example, the raid used the less wide one, and that helps the fights feel a little more close quarters and brutal. But that's just a minor thing I noticed.
I'm pretty sure they showed Spider-Man 2 on IMAX sometime.
Yes, they did. Yeah. I think they showed it, like, the initial, like, 2 or 3 months of its release.
I'm pretty sure I saw it at one point on IMAX, so...
Oh, that sounds awesome. I mean, I only saw the original trilogy. Like, I missed all of them in theaters. Bad timing.
We'll get to Spider-Man 3.
Yeah,
Spider-Man
saw the most recent one in theaters. Like, amazing.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 3 was the last film I saw with my friends in college before we graduated. Yeah. I think it came out the weekend we were graduating from school.
Yeah.
That was a disappointing note to end on.
My friend to this day still says that Spider-Man 3 is a great movie. I don't know when the last time he saw it.
But there are people who... I mean, my little brother prefers Batman and Robin.
Wrong.
I mean, if he prefers Batman Forever, I can understand.
Yeah. Anyway...
I like Batman Forever.
There are people who prefer Amazing Spider-Man to Spider-Man 2, so there are people...
Wait, hold up. To Spider-Man 2 or the original trilogy as a whole?
Any of them. General, there are people who like categorically dislike Raimi's Spider-Man, so prefer the new one.
I prefer it to one.
I feel that way.
I like it more than 1 and 3. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Don't worry, I'll burn that bridge soon.
Oh, okay, alright.
Okay, so yes, as we always do, what would you give this film out of 7? Let's try it off with James, since he's wrong, apparently.
10. 10 out of 7.
10 out of 7, that's
yes.
Work.
It can't work. As Roger Ebert said when he reviewed the movie 10 years ago, this is the best superhero movie ever made. 10 years later... I stand by that statement. This is a near-perfect movie. Every scene is wonderfully mixed with actual purpose and character and emotion. Some truly still terrific action sequences. Like, I love everything about it. Like, it's one of my 10 or so favorite movies ever. I actually forgot it was this good.
Okay.
I'm still sticking with 10 out of 7.
Okay. Justin...
I will give it a 7 out of 7. I'll give it a 7 out of 7. It's still pretty good, aside from some like story and acting things. It holds up really well, and it's a near perfect sequel with some great action and good character moments.
Okay, Chris.
I like this considerably less than Spider-Man 1. I didn't love it the first time around when it came out 10 years ago. I like it considerably less now. It just did not do anything for me watching it this past week. I'm going to go 4 out of 7.
Chris hates nice things.
I'm half with Chris. I still prefer it more than the first one, but I feel coming back, and maybe it's because I've seen so many films since then, I do think that it's not as good. I mean, it's still a great film, and it's still the best of the trilogy, I believe. Well, I mean, I have to revisit 3, but I don't think that's going to change much.
No, I don't think so.
No. 3, this secretly misaligned masterpiece that we've all been wrong this whole time.
Oh my god, you're insane.
Wow, that would be the surprise of the century.
We were just too annoyed by Pirates of the Caribbean 3 coming out around the same time and being awful. They were like, this is good, right? Yeah, this is good.
I didn't even see Pirates of the Caribbean 3.
But
it's the most bloated, incomprehensible mess of a movie. Naturally, I love it because of that.
God, you were just so wrong about everything. It's so sad.
Anyhow.
If it's going to be good, it has to be full bad.
Oh my god, James, you suck.
Okay, are we done?
Hey.
Well, Dave, we need your rating, Earl.
I know. I was going to go with a 6. I think this film is held up, you know, by good performances, because there isn't a lot of, like, plot there. There isn't a lot going on from scene to scene. It's not, like, it's really Peter's story, and it works because I still like Tobey Maguire in the role. And he still does a good job with this version of Peter Parker.
He has the best facial expressions ever.
That, oh, that freeze frame was so random.
I love it.
I don't.
I love his face, like, during the train, and, like, when he's about to jump off the roof. It's perfect.
Anyhow, yes, we will be back next week with the masterpiece that is Spider-Man 3. So, for James, Justin, Chris, and this has been the Amazing Spider-Cast 2.
Go, Web, go.
Spinning redemption, winding in and winding out. The shine of it has caught my eye and roped me in so mesmerizing, so hypnotizing. I am captivated, I am vindicated. I am selfish, I am wrong, I am right. I swear I'm right, swear I knew it. Like the diamond in your ring, cut to mirror your intention. Oversized and overwhelmed, the shine of which has caught my eye and rendered me so isolated, so motivated. I am certain now that I am vindicated. I am selfish, I am wrong, I am right. I swear I'm right, swear I knew it. Slow spinning redemption.